Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to our still untitled rewatch podcast. Although I don't know, Natalie, should we just, what if we just call it the one that Natalie said, even though we haven't vetted it or found out if it'll pass copyright muster? Natalie, you want to announce what this is now called until we find out that we can't call it anymore?
Be good and rewatch it.
That's good. I like that.
I like
so
it.
Be good, that's the name until we do a Google search and find out that someone else has it. So just that,
tell
you can take that to the
us.
Bank until. You can't.
You can take it to the bank, but don't cash it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You hold
go to the
it
bank.
Walk around outside the bank, you know?
Yeah.
It's fine.
Just hang out there. So this is our third entry in a rewatching James DeMonaco's Purge series, what at least started as an underrated horror series infused with striking political imagery and some messaging. We've previously looked back at The Purge and The Purge Anarchy, the first two movies in a four-part series that actually this week DeMonaco announced he wants to end with the fifth movie. Today we're, I wrote the line in my script here says deep dive. I don't know if I'd call this a deep dive. We'll dive into the third movie, The Purge Election Year. We'll save my whole thoughts on that until we get and introduce the whole Waypoint crew who's joining me here for this discussion. Natalie Watson, who you've branded this podcast, so that makes me happy.
I don't know if this pool has a deep end, y'all.
Wow, that's a great line. God damn.
Rob Zachney.
You better fucking win.
What? What?
Yeah,
Rob?
That's how we're going out.
Okay.
Austin?
Is that about subterfuge? Are we talking about subterfuge?
It is a line from the film.
That is a line from the film.
Repeatedly.
I also better fucking win because there's a timestamp for this because I have no idea when this episode's going to release because we have another one to release before this one does.
Yep.
Rob and I are currently in the middle of our subterfuge game. We have to stop Teal from becoming a tyrant. It's a whole thing. I'll put this out there. Here's the thing. My very first note on The Purge, since my opening gambit, is, excuse me, hands up, don't shoot Mike Brown shirt in the intro. Yeah, dog, you missed that. Rob just gave me a look like,
no,
I can't
I didn't
believe
miss
I'm...
it. I just...
Yeah.
I completely missed that, actually.
I saw it and just deleted it from my brain.
Fair.
Like, nope.
Good.
Danielle Riando.
They're not playing fair and fucking square.
They're not. It's also about subterfuge, actually. That's just... The Purge election year is.
Subterfuge is the Purge. My God, it is.
It is.
We
can't go here. We cannot go here. We have other important breaking news.
Yeah,
Patrick,
so
put an image in this chat.
To supplement the discourse, before we get to the Purge, we need to purge some thoughts about, just because I have to. It's like, we brought it up. I pasted an image in the chat. This is going to be very old news by the time this comes out, but then it'll be fresh because, you know, people will be ready for it, you know, 3 weeks later.
Right.
There's a photo of Justin Bieber eating a burrito, and it...
Improperly.
The photo,
is disturbing.
There's a lot of ways we could... He's in a park, and he has it in two hands, which, you know, sometimes you got a two-handed burrito. Sometimes, like, you got, depending on how you do that first bite, you know, part of it's flapping. You got to make sure you keep the rice and the beans and whatever else you've gotten in there. But he's cradling it like a child, like a small baby.
Hands at each end.
Yeah, hands on each end. And, like, all fingers surrounding this burrito as though, like, it's going to slip out of his fingers. And then biting into the center. Just the right of the center of the burrito. And it's a disturbing image.
Ugh.
It's an upsetting image.
It's bad.
It's not how you should eat a burrito.
It's fucked up, honestly.
It's going to be so messy. It's going to be so messy.
There's no respect here.
He doesn't have a napkin. There's
no
plate underneath.
No self-respect and no respect for the actual burrito.
Yeah.
Yeah, a big pink sweatshirt, which is just going to get covered immediately in beans.
All burrito.
In all the burrito fixins, as it were, just everywhere. That's what they call
them,
right?
Has a great comment in our chat saying, so messy. Anything about JB, TBH.
True.
Thank you, Kato.
True. Thank
it also
Kato.
Looks like guac is already spilling out of that. So the only
it's
thing
trying to flee.
Get me out of here.
This was made by the high schoolers in your town. That's a messy burrito. That's a not.
Yeah. Before
a
we started recording, I was explaining my plight of living in the suburbs, where we have decent Mexican food, but the burrito situation is dire, and I resigned myself to re-embracing Chipotle by necessity. But the quality of my Chipotle burritos are now highly contingent on the emotional status of the teenagers that are working at that Chipotle. Because you see the same ones, and I've seen them make a good burrito, and they just did not give a shit.
Yep.
Hold on.
Had a bad day.
I have
in algebra class.
Important update.
Please.
About this photo that I just noticed. A very important detail is the bracelet he is wearing.
Yeah. Uh
huh. Is
what's popping off on
that
bracelet?
If it is what I think it is a Mexican saint bracelet.
Oh, I see.
Where
I see
it's
saying.
like the you buy them and they have each of the saints, or sometimes they have each of the Virgin Marys around it. It's I've seen it in Guatemala too. It's a Latin American thing.
Uh-huh.
Which makes this photo
it looks exactly like
one.
He was
on that song last year that was popular, so Justa could do whatever he wants now.
That is how it works. I'm gonna post an image of these in the chat. You can see, that's what this is for sure.
Oh, wow.
That is 100% what this is.
So I think this is just awkward timing. I think he's sitting there on the bench and he's like, I need to have a Dylan-esque folk phase. And he's trying out the harmonica thing with the burrito. This is just my prop. The burrito's just a prop. He's not eating it.
He's playing it.
Mm-hmm. He's playing it.
He's biting a little
blowing
hard.
Gently upon the burrito.
How many roads must a Bieber walk down?
Saint Bieber, please. We call him Saint Bieber now. Zombie bear.
All right. Well, now I'm just, it's because we're recording this at lunchtime.
I just want a burrito.
Yeah,
we fucked up.
Me too. I'm definitely ordering Mexican food after this.
I don't think I have a burrito in my future, but I'm only thinking about it for tonight.
I love to look at burritos without having eaten lunch and then talk about a bad movie. That's what I love to do.
Maybe
I might be the outlier here.
Okay.
Okay, that's good.
That's exciting.
I'm not saying it's a good movie, but I think there are actually some good things in this movie.
Totally.
Sure.
Totally with you.
All right. So forewarned, as with all the previous films, and this podcast in general, we're just gonna spoil things, up front. So hopefully you've seen it. If not, you'll be fine. So the Purge election year takes place. It's not hyper specific, but it seems it's at least 18 years after purging has started. The essential figure is this woman named Charlie, who her life was defined by a moment early in the purge cycle where her entire family was murdered in front of her. She has then worked her way into politics and is running on a platform to end the purge. She is the main candidate against the new founding fathers. The political parties and how they work is not super well explained in the world building of the purge, but her platform is basically end the purge. It's profiting the elites and guns manufacturers and the NRA, and it's at the expense of eradicating, dehumanizing the poor, blah blah blah, she's taking one of the political through lines, and that's her political platform. She is running very close in the polls. From what we are the information we're given, she's 1 point behind, so within the margin of error, and that's got the new founding fathers really riled up and upset. Room full of white people, just really aggravated. And so they're conspiring to take her out during the upcoming purge, and by dismantling or removing one of the sort of core tenets of the purge, which is that certain government figures are protected status.
Level 10 and above. Yeah.
Yeah. And the last movie, this is then framed around a healthy number of like sort of characters who are people of color. And then the election year, where you open on sort of like a small store, which like, guess what? A bodega is technically only in New York, right?
He calls it a deli,
I think. The guy who
it's
owns
a corner store.
It's a corner store.
It's a corner store. You know, a deli. They got like a limited grocery selection. You could probably get some liquor there, like a little bit of everything. It's the kind of place where a lot of like regulars are coming in and out of. It's like a small mom and pop place where you would, if you were going in there in the morning, you'd be seeing a lot of the same people hanging out, reading the newspaper. And so,
It's cramped than most bodegas I frequent, is what I will say. It's a kind of a spacious place. There's enough room for there to be like I guess some bodegas I've been to have like a table and chair set up for the hot stuff. But it's a nice place. It's a nice place. Like it's
and
genuinely.
It's DC. We should probably say this. Yes. This is definitely DC. This takes place in a specific place.
Right. Yeah. And the previous film took place in Los Angeles. Do we know where the first one took place?
A suburb.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And so the owner, he gets a call, you know, being told that his Purge insurance is, you know, getting yanked away unless he pays up. There's like a lot of, you know, chatter in the corner store about like people's different political affiliations, how they feel about whether they can be saved by this woman who's saying she's gonna end the Purge. There's sort of a protege, like a sort of pseudo son character for the owner, who decides that he's gonna back up the owner and they're gonna kind of wait out the Purge and defend the place from anyone who tries to, I guess, sort of ransack it for provisions. And also in the store is a woman who has a mysterious past, where it's like implied that she's like some sort of badass that used to be sort of, you know, respected in the streets for reasons that are alluded to, but not necessarily like fully fleshed out. And these days,
the little death, is that what she's called?
Yeah, right? She's the little death.
And I'm starting to wonder as I get to my last little a point about this is like maybe the reason Danielle likes this movie is because what she does during the Purge is be on an ambulance trying to help out victims and get them to trauma units.
Exactly.
So she's good at fighting.
And she's like an amazing EMT rescue person. Like, how could I not? You know.
She's great.
Anyway. So I guess let's because I feel like a lot of us had a negative response. Like Daniel, like I want to throw it to you. Like pick up that thread. Like, what was your takeaway from the film that I think maybe we all agree like is a pretty steep drop off in quality. Like it's a steep drop from 1 to 2 to 3. But what was your takeaway? What did you find interesting about it that you found worth it?
Yeah, a lot of it for me is just identifying with that character and really sort of loving her. I actually felt like a genuine swell of pride for this character. Yeah. Not only is she like a person who loves her community, cares about her community, spends time like being a person in her community, joking and laughing, and like she's there with people. She's not like some Christ-like figure or something like that. She is there to both fight and to rescue people. She is 100% there for sort of both sides of that. And I felt like this swell of pride when they go to like a sort of hospital area. They call it like a safe zone or a triage zone where the specific line is we've got doctors, we've got nurses, we've got EMTs, we've got paramedics. This is how they protest this horrible night. Like, sorry, they might not say horrible, but like paraphrasing. Right. Yeah. It's like I genuinely felt like, oh, this is what I would want to do. And I feel like I said that in a previous episode, like, oh, where would you be during Purge night? And it was like, yeah, man, like, look, there's people being real people. It's that old fucking Mr. Rogers quote about when something horrible is happening, like, look to the helpers. The helpers will give you comfort. And like, that's 100% where my brain went. So I loved this character. And I genuinely loved that little crew of characters. So like, I identified so much with Lainey and like, you know, obviously not like personally, I'm not a person of color, but like I really liked what she was there for. I liked what she was doing. I really, really loved her. And I liked that crew. I liked Joe. I liked Marcos. He's the sort of the dude who works for Joe's deli. I liked their old friend who talked about really loving pussy and waffles. Like, there was just like a
that fucking quote.
I know.
And it came back.
It's cheesy. It's
yeah, there was a callback.
I like so relate to all of this, Danielle, in that like the identification of like this is the so first movie has like this throwaway black character in it that shows that the filmmakers are vaguely interested in some sort of racial politics.
Right.
Second film has characters of color, women of color at a forefront. but still has the sort of like audience analog, white audience analog characters as like the drawing and all the marketing.
Here's who you're supposed to identify with. Yeah. These
right,
are you.
Right. Here,
the people of color will surround you, but this is you.
This still has that with Leo, obviously, but I'm so with you, Danielle, in that opening, spending so much time setting up Joe's spot, right? Joe's grocery, and focusing on characters like Joe and Marcos and Little Death. I forget Lainey is her last name, right? Yeah.
I
know all of these people. I know the dude in the bodega who says he only cares about pussy and waffles.
Irish Eye.
Yeah, that's it. Great name. Fuck. I know Joe, right? Like, there's a reason why this is the first time I wish I could have seen this movie in a black movie theater on opening night, because we would have loved it. We would have had a great fucking time. It would not have been a good movie, but I would have had an incredible time when Joe is like, these are our white people, because we say that. Like, that is there's truth in that representation, even if it also is like eye-rolly and sometimes feels tokenistic. It's also a great example of early on the sort of like when you have six characters of color on screen, one of them can be terrible and it doesn't feel like you're writing a stereotype, because when it is a community of color taking care of itself and dealing with internal threats, like the bitchy teen who is still a problem for other reasons,
yes,
isn't as much of a problem as the version of this story where this is a white grocery and there is like a couple of black kids here causing havoc. That's a nightmare compared to this.
Yeah.
I think so. One of the things I was saying, like going into this movie, to me, this entire movie feels like events have overtaken The Purge, and The Purge is now much less of a far-out satire than it was initially conceived of being, right? Like, this is a movie being, like finishing production against the backdrop of Trump's candidacy in the Republican primary. The movie itself is coming out in the year of Clinton versus Trump, and things that seemed pretty, like, conceptual when the Purge series began are starting to like become very literal and very real.
Yeah.
And this movie, I think, begins to struggle with its sudden relevance. Like, I think the movies had an easier time with it when this is all very speculative. And this was talking about like the nightmares beneath the floorboards of American discourse. By 2016, by the election year, those like nightmares are starting to come up from beneath the floorboards. And I think this movie is suddenly inhibited by that awareness and begins trying to be more literally analogous to what is happening in the world. But the way it does that, and this is where I begin to get uncomfortable even in these opening scenes, is that to me it begins starting to play, and I know we throw this word around a lot on this show, but there's a certain degree of like centrism and respectability I find informing a lot of the scene that makes me deeply uncomfortable. Now, this movie features, like, I love McKelty Williamson, just like loved him on Boomtown, loved him on Justified, but I feel like his performance is definitely being used to paper over some awkwardness in the way the script is even written.
McKelty
like
is Leo?
Wait, who's McKelty? He's Joe.
Joe.
He's
the
Joe.
The guy who owns a deli.
Oh, okay.
But what I see here is that it does establish sort of the, you know, the shooting the shit vibe of a neighborhood place, a corner store. But the other thing I see is sort of a property owner of color, a small businessman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's holding together the community. And these teenagers of color are completely feral. They're terrifying. They have no respect. And that is such a familiar framing that even in that opening scene, to me, it smacks a little bit of, we must draw a line between people who are virtuous and are minorities, but they are virtuous, and then the terrifying super predators that, like,
are roaming the streets, literally.
Yeah, and that's when the Clintonian politics of this movie, which I think are shot through it, 100%. Really begin to make themselves felt.
The follow on to that, two things really quick. One is that that's also true with Marcos's character. He's a citizen. Yes. It's they establish that he's like, I got here 8 years ago. I came from nothing. I've been in Juarez. Every day in Juarez is the purge. And it's there's a version of that that is thoughtful and subtle, that is a reminder that there are people in the world who go through – who live through horrible conditions, and that kind of shake the American – the kind of I guess not just American centrism in the political sense, but in the kind of centering of the American experience sense that is – that works. Being like, I come from Juarez, where every day is the purge, is not that. And then insisting on his citizenship as is almost a quality of his radical change and his arrival as a true American. Also, is like, eugh, ugh. The second
he's the American dream,
right? Exactly, he literally is.
I have that quote. Like, if I could read it super quick, there is a scene please. Between Joe and Marcos, and he says, "Coming from another country like you did, having your own business." The American dream is still alive.
It's still alive, baby. Oh. Get out, you know. Too. Pokemon go to the polls. And so the other thing there, though, is to go back to your bit, Rob, on the film struggling with its sudden relevance. One of the things, or the series of sudden relevance, one of the things that it does is that it ejects subtext entirely. And I don't mean simply that it pulls off a mask and reveals its true self. I mean that the previous films worked insofar as they worked because they were also working with subtext. And I don't even mean deep subtext. I just mean that there were stakes that existed beside the core function of the plot, the core plot beats. In the first film, and I dragged it for this, you know, when we first did that first episode, but I also said, like, this is what it is. That was a film about the soul of the white family, and especially the white father figure, and would the white father give in to the propaganda and ideology that turns them into monsters, whether that is something about toxic masculinity or about, you know, wealth and class warfare. Like, would this white dad turn into a torturer because the rich people asked him to? Would this upwardly mobile middle-class white family break bad? In the second film, the stakes are about Leo and whether or not Leo will kill this dude and whether or not these brown women can save Leo's heart. And again, not necessarily great, but there is a subtext there that is the thing that you're paying attention to. That is like what is the it's not even a B plot, but it is the kind of like emotional core to the film. Here, the plot is the plot. The plot is, can these black and brown folks protect this white lady along with Leo the Punisher? Can they get through the night? They try to toss some stuff on. They try to toss on Joe's relationships with Leo and with Marcos. They try to toss on the question of whether or not Dante will pull the trigger on the other politician, the minister, by the end. But that plot isn't given enough time to breathe, and Dante isn't a real character until the final act, and so he has no room to sacrifice. It's super bad. It's just the fucking worst. And then two, Joe is so easygoing with everybody that his relationships are never actually in doubt. Even when he and Leo are like butting heads, it feels like they're playing at butting heads the way mm-hmm. that men do. And so there's no stake there. There's nothing underneath the surface. And so for me, that was like a big difference in the watching of this movie. Was when I was watching The Purge 1, when I was watching Purge Anarchy, there was so much for me to dissect and to see how it was building into some core central message. Though maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the core central message is this Clintonian kind of America is exceptional by the way in which it's kind of like as long as you follow the rules, you should be able to succeed no matter your color or creed. You know, you too can be a small business. You too can come to Main Street and run a grocery store in Washington D.C. Maybe that's the core thing, and I was just missing it while watching, but. In contrast to those previous films, there just wasn't enough to dig into, and I found my attention swaying.
Yeah, there's just such a blind trust in Charlie, like a blind trust in sort of the white lady who's going to win it for us and get us through. Yeah. To the other, there's no points of contention there. There's no sort of, I mean, she's literally framed like in the first sort of scene when she like decides to go amongst the crowd and the camera like lights her from behind and she has like a halo, literal halo of light around her head from coming from the back. She's like backlit or whatever. And that's never contended with or questioned. And everyone just immediately rallies behind her, which is just, yeah, it is very sort of, I don't know, I'm with her, like, Hillary Clinton-esque.
Well, she doesn't explain, like, any of her, like, her like, explanation of her ideology or, like, why she's pushing back on the purge or why it's not good for America, like, is so surface level and boring. And she, like,
they're attacking brown people. They're attacking poor people, is what she said.
Right. And like, it was just...
Yeah.
I was expecting... There's a version of this movie that, like, digs into, like... There could be, like, a thematic through line, which, like, it plays with but never quite, like, pulls onto and keeps grabbing at the thread of, like, oh, the way Democrats, like, co-opt people of color into a coalition to win elections but never actually delivers on the promise of making their lives, like, meaningfully better. And it's like, wow, like, there's a lot to, like, tug on in that degree. And the movie clearly has that idea playing around, like, the way that, like, the resistance has, you know, evolved in that they, you know, it's, you know, revealed that they are engaging in, I wouldn't call it dirty tactics, they're called, you know, equal tactics. They're just playing on the same playing field as the new founding fathers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the tension between... You know, this potentially elected official. Well, I guess she's a senator, so she's an elected official. Saying like you know, like no, don't do that. Like don't, you know, we gotta you know do it the right way. We can't have blood on our hands. And like there are all these things in isolation. You're like, oh, like I see where it's playing with like really complicated ideas that have to do with like the Democratic Party. Like there's a way to look at this movie as like an indictment of the Democratic Party, but it never goes far enough. It never pulls in those ideas enough. It never makes a cohesive enough argument. And I think maybe this plays into this thing, Austin, that you brought up about, Rob brought up too, about like where the real world events, when it's catching up to its reality, it doesn't have the weight. It hasn't fully thought through those ideas. And I think part of like we praised the first movie in which if you go back and look at the criticism of that movie when it came out was that, gosh, it is really on the fucking nose. And in retrospect, it needed to be on the nose in which, like, making everything subtext wasn't enough. You actually had to make that text in a way to have it land. And that felt refreshing when viewed through the lens of 2018. But then as it goes along, like, it didn't seem like it caught up to itself and the weight of the material it was working with combined with the weight of the material that was happening in real life. And it starts losing those threads in a way that... There's a version of this movie that is really interesting in how it applies a deep criticism to the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton's like whole campaign, but one that it doesn't stick the landing and actually doesn't seem super interested in doing. It just seems more like it's pulling an idea to give it weight without actually thinking through the consequences of what that idea even means.
Yeah, it's very, very much like plays with some really dangerous imagery that I actually thought was relatively, well, completely unsubtle, but smart. Like there is a portion where they go into the murder tourism stuff where people from different countries are coming here to experience the purge. Importantly, it's a white South African who like goes on the news talking about how much he can't wait to kill people and you know, basically, you know, it's like a very unsubtle metaphor, obviously. And then there are Russians who wear, you know, founding fathers garb, like ridiculous, you know, 4th of July bullshit, and they're speaking Russian, and it's like, okay, this is the most unsubtle, you know, Trump-Clinton comparison ever, and they're making it, and it's obviously text, and it's right there in front of them, but then they end the movie on this note of like, oh, she won in a sweep. Like, a much smarter movie makes her lose, it makes the founding fathers win, it makes the Trump figures win, it makes, you know, what actually happened happen, and this movie... didn't quite go there. It's playing with fire. It's playing with some of this imagery, but it doesn't finish the sentence in any kind of coherent way.
Well, I think that her pitch, so this is where like there's a political angle to this movie in terms of like just sit like the narrative is about the politics of Purge World, of the new founding fathers version of America. And Charlie Rohn's pitch is, as you said, like predominantly, hey, the purge is cruel, it's vicious, it's classist. And it doesn't go too far beyond that, but fundamentally the pitch is to this idea that this is not who we are.
Our
that,
better like, angels. Let's appeal to our better angels. That's not a fucking argument.
No.
Genuinely, her argument is this: we are going to appeal to the centrists. We are going to win over moderates who just maybe purge less. And
doesn't this make you feel uncomfortable?
This is where the movie's like the movie is, but the series is so dark and cynical about America. And then 2016, as it becomes reality, it's like DeMonico flinches from the vision. and is like, no, this isn't, this can't be, like, everyday people wouldn't stand for this.
Well, this movie did come out in July, right? Like, so, like, you have to keep in mind, like, the production of this film was probably late 2015, you know, comes out in the middle of July. Like, remember what most people, the rational thinking on, like, how that year was going to play out. It doesn't make an excuse, you know, some of the things we're talking about, but it's interesting to think about, like, the framing in which this was written, like, probably around the time of, like, coming
down
the
Golden Escalator. This was shot in 2015.
But, of course, like, 3 years earlier, the movie absolutely knows the shit is out there in the world.
Right.
That, like, this is on the wind. And then, the minute it's real, the movie, like, throws its, like, rhetorical weight into this idea of, well, there is a population of moderates who will find this horrific and will save the country from itself. The previous two movies are basically like, this country cannot save itself from this shit. Like, those moderates are not going to help you. The moderates are going to be the people in the first movie. That's the point of the series.
Well, no, but because the thing is, that first movie, I think I made this point in the first episode, fundamentally, it is cynical about politics. It is cynical about America as it stands, but it's deeply hopeful that people are inherently good. That, like, the entire premise of the plot of the purge as a thing the government put into place is that it was a scam and that the science is bad. The science is actually false about us having all of this evil in us, this need to purge, and that the wool has been pulled over our eyes so that the rich can profit. And this film also is the first time that they've tried to kind of show what that means in terms of, like, insurance premiums and day-after cleanup services and gun sales, right? Like, those are the specific – they finally start to say who is specifically profiting. And I actually – I'm, like, glad we finally got that bit of world building. But if you go back to that first film – the little kid, the little brother, the youngest child, is the character who is supposed to be the one who is like, oh, this is what pure humanity looks like. I don't have this in me. And so on a long enough time scale, I think this film believes genuinely that, oh, people are just good deep down and they can get past the politics and the ideology, which again is the centrist position that, like, in a place where there could be, if only we could have debates where we could walk out into the audience and show them that we're real, if only we could just, like, talk about it a bunch, people would come around. And I think that's actually totally in line with the core ideology of the film. It's just that it also thinks that there's a poisonous undercurrent in society and in the politics that could tempt people. Though even here, I think that it's poorly used. Like, this is a film that has a neo-Nazi in it, but the neo-Nazi is the guy who is like, fuck it, we're only here to drop off the package, not to gift wrap it. And, like,
yeah,
no dog, you're a Nazi. Like, you don't get to be you don't write that character and have him be kind of
just
utilitarian.
Taking a check.
And,
the moderate
work here.
It was weird that, like, you know, very early they do, like, a very unsubtle camera motion over, like, a white power, like, logo on their gear. And I kept thinking, like, oh, well, they're going to keep pulling on that thread. Like, even in the sequence where there is a standoff between a set of people, of a black gang and these white power, like, paramilitary figures, it's not, like, there's no element, there's no race element to it. It's just like they have a standoff. It's just like weird the way the movie is throwing things at the screen, and then it's like, oh, even if you're not going to be subtle about this, well, at least there's a thread you're pulling on. It's like, no, like, it's just there, and just it moves on to the next idea pretty quickly.
I was gonna say, like, kind of the same thing, Austin, is just that it is so much about, like, saving the American heart and about saving, you know, making moral arguments, which is what feels very, like, I don't know, that people that and the real point is that the policy, like, the fact of the matter should be enough. Like, it shouldn't be, I don't know, wait, God, yeah, I don't know, I feel like you said it, Austin.
As an aside, like, I just don't logistically understand how this world works. Like, right, so the new founding fathers, in some ways, it's implied, like, they're this, like, totalitarian, fascistic regime, and yet they respect election results?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's, like, completely in line with...
Yeah, so, okay, that's the Republican Party. obviously.
Well, also, they respect that. Yes, they respect election results provided they win and provided they have a massive structural advantage in those elections. But like most authoritarian regimes have elections. It's just how many ways have you created to sort of goose the vote in your favor, right? What disincentives have you created for people voting against you? Like, absolutely. I think it's kind of smart that, like, the way people like this are going to operate is they will allow you to keep the form of the familiar government. They will allow you to keep the form of, like, representation. It will not exist in reality. And the point of this movie is when they feel like their rigged fucking election might go against them, their immediate play is to stage a hit. Their immediate play is to let's get someone on the inside of her campaign turned against her.
Well, no, the immediate play is that for years you just fix local elections so that those election results look the way you want them to. Let her run. She just gets 12% of the vote. And I'm not bringing real world logic into this fucking movie where there is a purge insurance industry. I'm not trying to apply that, but what I would have loved to have seen was set up of like, well, had people tried to run before? And what happened to them? Did they get killed or did they just fail? Could they not get the political capital? I love the idea of this character who's like, there are enough real people, regular people who are hurt by the purge who want to support me.
It's been 18 years. It's been two decades
of the purge.
And there's no world where like this isn't like a new idea, right? Like someone just didn't like go, shit, you know what I need to do is run on against the purge and then like I'll get 48% of the vote.
If you live in this world and you're 18, this is your first election and you've only ever known the purge, right? Get out that youth vote. Like, it's going to happen, right? But that's never said in this
movie. Vote or
die. Vote or die, right, exactly. Diddy's out there trying. Diddy, who I guess is 70 in this movie, is out there trying to make it happen. But we don't see that. We don't see, like, is there a party she's attached to? They kind of call her a wild card candidate. Like, is there a party?
She's a Democrat. It's blue and red at the end of the movie.
Yeah, but, like, is the Democratic
Party... But
they're
also not Republicans. They're the new founding fathers. Yeah, so it's like, who is this... Like, there is stuff like that.
I feel like
that's
a pretty transparent metaphor.
No, of course it is. No, of course that is, but it's not because...
But their ideologies must have changed as a fundamental result of, like, the political realignment that the purge creates.
Who
so it's like, yes, they're
running against in the primaries, right? Like, what's the rest of the makeup of that party?
Is it a socialist party?
Right. Like, are they winning local elections? Does she
this
support?
Is why we're watching that fucking TV show. Like, these questions.
So apparently.
Enter the Purgeverse.
We are not watching the TV show because apparently the TV show does not do what you are hoping it would do, Rob, which is like get into the world. It's just like a long version of one of these movies. Like it doesn't do like flash forwards and flashbacks and like tying together world building and like people's lives. It's just like more of this in a way that is not particularly satisfying. What if this movie with like election year was like, oh, actually, we're going to do like a pull out. Like, yes, like with the thread we're following is this particular candidate. But if there was like jumping around the timeline, like ways of like filling in like the political history and the way like there are, I guess that's what's always so frustrating about these movies is like there are a lot of threads that I'd love to pull on that it just doesn't.
Or if it was not only, so when they first showed Joe's, for some reason I was like, oh, you know what it was? Because Marcos was like, Florida is the key. And I was like, oh damn, are they in Florida? Are we just going to get two parallel stories of Leo and Roan and presumably Dante, because I knew he was in the movie and was associated, and then also this little corner store in Miami where they end up stopping voter suppression or something, you know, whatever the fuck it is.
Right.
Is there some sort of like little picture, big picture? Like, no, it isn't. It's not the movie they're making, and that's fine. Like, it's fine for it to not be that version of it. But there are ways in which. There are times when trying to spend that attention to detail will help the core metaphors that you're trying to make become clearer for the audience. And this is a movie where that would have really helped, given that the stuff that's at stake or the stuff that they want the audience to think about is so unclear and it reduces down into this really kind of boring centrism. Like, of course you're going to vote Democratic if the Republican Party is literally trying to initiate the purge. And so there is value in trying to, like, work through some of the things that the movie tries to set up briefly around politicians not helping actually impoverished communities or actually marginalized populations. But they don't ever dig into that stuff. And so if you could have set Charlie Roan as someone who was, like, this party has not done enough for you people. This party, you know, when I was a kid, I thought that they they would save us, and they
some
all they
kind
ever
of
did
acknowledgement,
was push for
some reforms.
Because
you set up the argument, but don't engage with it. Like, that's what makes those, because it's not like they just do it once. They do it multiple times in which black characters tell this white politician, like, fuck you, like, done with those promises. Like, Joe actually outright says that multiple times. Like, I'm tired of hearing the promises. Like, I have no faith in this system, like, because the system failed me. But it never, like, makes good on that. I mean, part of what actually makes, like, that whole section of the movie where they're, like, arguing over tactics and, like, whether they should, you know, engage in killing and, like, tracking down these rich folks and just fucking them over. Like, it certainly feels newly relevant in the, you know, discussions we're having these days about, like, whether we should be going into restaurants and, like, yelling at Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz, in which, like, oh, you know, that's a step too far, is making those people feel uncomfortable, like, if we make their
real
lives
miserable. Says, when they go low, we go high.
Ugh.
Right?
That feels very Obama, too, though, in a lot of ways. Right?
I mean, like, that specific quote was Clinton, but
no,
yeah.
No, I know, I just...
Yes.
She's obviously
totally
a Clinton figure. Like, there's no way she isn't in any way. But that was Obama's biggest pitch for his entire presidency, was the higher road and reaching across the aisle and so on and so on and so forth. Like, it does feel like it's an indictment. Not an indictment. I don't want to say that, because this movie does not have that strong of a thesis. But
right.
I want to read it in such a way that it is not only Clinton, but Obama, and, like, really every kind of centrist Democrat in the last 10 years or so.
But based on, like, you know, Austin's positioning, and I agree with it, is that actually this movie is taking the Obama, like, position. It's saying, like, no. Like, if we just – if we can win the day on the argument – on the merits.
Right.
Like, these people can be reasoned with. And it's like, when you are starting at the 20-yard line, you're just going to move back to the 15 as opposed to pushing down the field.
Yeah.
Well, it's the – like, this is the thing that really frustrates me about this movie, is once it unites its various threads and gets the – so I did like the sequence, the early part of the movie where it's setting up the whole, like, getting ready to protect the senator, right? And they're just, like, barricading that fortress. And you're like, how's this going to go wrong? Mm-hmm. And there's treachery from the inside. Meanwhile
– can I also just say – really quick, she was like, I don't want to look like a rich asshole in a lockdown, whatever, and then stays in her multi-million-dollar home. Can I just say that real fast? Okay, thank
you. Her beautiful Georgetown townhouse. Yeah.
So, yeah, and they're sort of holding down the store and all that, and eventually, like, both groups are sort of flushed out, and they have to work together. They unite. They hook up. They begin to hook up with this resistance. But the moment that happens, they begin talking. They begin their sort of dialogue of a battle of worldviews, one could say.
Interesting.
This is where this thing gets maximally Clintonian to me, and Obama-esque, is that, it is all these organized... communities and armed resistance that have been put together by communities of color, sort of in the absence of any sort of official protection throughout all of this. And that infrastructure is being used to quite literally, like, save the life and political viability of Charlie Rohn and her entire movement. And she can't stop fucking telling them what to do. Like, she hears them. She, like, and that's the thing. This entire movie is very much like, I hear you. I understand you've been disappointed.
Yeah, what is her movement?
It's her movement, like, literally, like, is kind of like, shut up and let me handle this. And that's where it gets deeply uncomfortable. This whole notion of, like, no, you're resisting the wrong way. And her argument is basically, if we violently oppose the new founding fathers, we'll lose those moderates. That's basically it, right? Yeah. That, like, there's going to be the op-ed from, I don't know, Purge Max Boot or whoever the fuck. And it's going to be like, I was against the purge until the new founding fathers were attacked. And now I'm for it. Thanks, liberals. And, like, and that's in the political reality of this movie, Charlie Rohn is terrified of losing David Brooks. Like, still, to this day, is still like, David Brooks is going to save us. People like David Brooks, those millions of people out there.
Compassionate conservatives.
God. Yeah, they're going to save us. We can't alienate them. So this is cute, what you built here. Your resistance, your community organizations, all that stuff. And we'll make use of it. Like, it's useful to me today. But I need you to get back in line.
Yeah, she has no... like there are no displays of her actual action. There are no displays of like this was already said, but like her critiques are super superficial. They're like, you know, like I said, they are attacking poor people, or this is systemic, or this is like these big kind of like grabby words.
She read a
like
Wikipedia page about the purge.
Exactly. And the thing is, Carmelo.
You hear about this shit? Yeah.
It seems bad out there.
Yeah.
In comparison to Carmelo, who, what happened to Carmelo?
Yeah.
What happened to Carmelo?
They set off, like there was a line in the movie where he was it was part of a television bit. Like he's like, oh, he was in a shootout.
Okay.
And was killed.
Carmelo,
AKA they couldn't afford him.
Carmelo was like a leader who was like, you know, when they were showcasing him, his character development was about specific action, was about specific, right. Like very specific problems that are like, like he was introducing all that sort of stuff. And then all this language gets co-opted by Charlie without anything to... And there's just no, like, you don't see like Charlie, like there was a Roan sticker on the bodega or the corner store or whatever, but there's no like displays of Charlie's action or
what
like
was she doing as a senator? What was she doing? Was she making things in her district better for people who like, what was she doing actually? What bills did she support? Because there are ways to fight the purge without stopping the purge, right?
I mean, she was fighting the drones. That's what it was.
Oh yeah. That's fair.
Oh my god.
Like the second movie is like, fuck you, fuck your money.
Yeah.
And Charlie, I feel like, is a character who would swoop in there and be like, hey, nobody's saying they didn't earn this.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying, like, that is how
they worked hard
feels.
For that money. Haha.
Yeah. It's
still a lot of blood that wasn't theirs. Yeah.
Well, so that's there's such a big distinction to me between two and three here, in that in three, the big message that Charlie wants to put forward to Dante is like, hey, if you kill them, you're just as bad as them. If we do this, we're purging too. And two firmly understood that you could kill people without purging. What the resistance movement in anarchy was doing was not purging.
Yeah.
And there's even that moment where the woman who's lost her boyfriend is like, I want to purge. And the film frames that in such a way that it's clear that she has like, that's not... No one else there is that. Everyone else there is like, I want to kill rich folk. And she wants to purge because she's this like middle-class white woman who's come to understand violence in terms of purging versus bad violence. And so in this moment, I'll let her purge with us. Let her think she's purging.
She's useful.
Like,
she's a tool.
Whereas here,
she can point a gun.
Charlie Roan would be like, no, put the gun down. Don't shoot them. And that's, it's like, it feels like it's missed, it's lost
give them
that bit of its heart.
Give them a Pepsi.
Charlie Roan will defund Acorn in a heartbeat. Like, she will do it like day two.
100%.
Like, that is what
well, because you got to give up a little bit to get a little, Rob. Yeah. I mean, that's just how politics
and,
works.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't, like, I know we tend to belabor these things, but, like, this is a very effective, like, this is a movie that superficially looks, like, hopeful and inspiring, but if you dig into it, those, like, the exchanges you see between these characters really are echoing a lot of dynamics that have defined like center-left politics like throughout our lifetimes.
And, I mean, that's often people that feel like they're doing the right. Like, I think if you were to like ask, I don't know this for sure, but if you were to ask the screenwriter, you know, DeMonaco, like, you feel like this is like a leftist, more progressive film, like you have progressive politics, like he would probably say it's like, because I think there's a lot of people that actually believe in this stuff that are well-meaning people, but have lived within a framing, within a context of how policy is supposed to operate, in which it is disingenuous, not because they are trying to be like purposely ignorant, but that's just the framing they've grown up in. And so I think you can read this movie or you can write this movie and think you're saying something different than what you're actually saying, because so many people like myself, like I grew up in like the 90s was like, you know, going into my teens, like my whole framing of politics and a lot of people is Clintonian and Obama-in, that's not a word, but like is like a certain like pragmatist centrist like framing in which like if that's what we've been told by all the elites, all the people who are supposed to tell you how politics works, like of course you're going to settle that way, because why would you have been told otherwise? Like that requires a lot of like personal digging, finding out different ways of framing politics and how to engage with it. And for a lot of people, because politics is something they think about every 4 years, it's like understand. I mean, I'm not trying to excuse that frame of mind. I'm just trying to just see how you arrive at a film that has very mixed. Like, there are a lot of people that in the Trump era are projecting left, if even though in their like their actual politics probably hasn't shifted as far left as their rhetoric has.
Yeah.
This is a different thread, so if you guys have a...
I think that's it for me on this one. I'm going to leave. I'm just going to go. No, I'm not.
Go get a burrito.
God, I wish.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Natalie, go ahead.
So I think the last thing that I wanted to kind of touch on is the like people of the notion of people of color against people of color, like black on black crime in the scene, which they're like in the ambulance, like waiting out the helicopter. And They specifically introduced the sort of like ambulance situation as not touched by, like, specifically there's like an unwritten rule where like triage is not, you know, targeted, except for sometimes. But what was so weird to me is when the Crips are approaching, the like gang or whatever who are identified by the Crips as the Crips, because the Joe Laney and Marcos, the three main people of color, all have mysterious, like perhaps violent pasts.
Oh yeah,
which is explicitly violent pasts.
You know, they learned how to become
politics.
Part of society. Yeah.
Anyway, so when the gang is approaching, they have a guy. You can see a guy like slung over their shoulder, like clearly injured, and they're like. They're like bashing on the van, and it is so obvious that they're looking for help.
And isn't Joe, who was the one looking at them to begin with? Was Joe the one looking for at them?
Joe
to
was
with,
the
was
one.
Leo?
I think it was Joe. I want to say it was Joe that was like,
we have to move. We got to move. They're going to move us.
Exactly. And like, that was just such a weird moment for me, and that the only reason why like violence wasn't enacted there was because Joe was a part of this specific gang. And it is not that like if Laney, a member of the community that would probably be known by this like group of people, because they are in the community, and like this triage van that's been going around all night, like Laney picked up a kid that like a gang kid that night.
And then lectured him about his lack of political awareness.
That did happen. Literally happened.
It was
Don't you watch CNN? She didn't say that.
You're embarrassing us in front of the senator.
Rondo, I think it was his name.
Yeah, it was just, that was just such a weird thread for me. And that also like was brought up with the like dissenting teens or whatever. And just the way, like how long that sequence was of them like arriving to the bodega or the corner store or whatever, of just like it was on them for so long.
That just felt creatively exhausted to me, though. Like that whole sequence with the car and the fairy lights and them getting out in their fucking prom dresses, and the scene goes on for like ever. Like they're dancing for like 5 minutes, and it's all
feels
just like
they're padding out the screen time, which is like slow that shit down. We got to get this movie to an hour and a half.
But also, it's like. But the way it just feels like this is the Purge, and like you put on your fancy masks and shit, and like it's a weird clash of like violence and fanciness, and like this is our brand now. We just look, you need to see the fucking prom dresses and blood, okay? You happy now?
It was like affording that same sense of entitlement from the first kids, from the first Purge movie, where like all the like the rich young white kids, it was giving the like group of teens in this movie the same like sense of entitlement and like showing up with like the decked out car right. and like the decked out guns like with rhinestones on.
I don't know where they got that shit.
Where the fuck did you get that shit?
I guess they killed their parents, but still, no.
It was just, it was so...
Where'd you get that chainsaw?
It was so just like out of place to me. And what are you running those fairy lights off of? Yeah, also, good question.
I guess they probably hit a Home Depot first.
Yeah,
you know, that's what it was. Yeah. That's the chainsaw, the lights, yeah.
Here's, spinning off of that briefly, like, one of the things that gets to is that the concept here is really... potent for a lot of reasons. There's a lot you can work with inside of it. But there is always this risk that you untether it from the core, whatever that core question is, and that when you do that, you open it up to be just like a fucking minefield. Because that's what I feel like happens here, right? It's like, oh, we have a good idea. It's like, what if they're like teens and they are like in like Catholic school uniforms? They're very provocative and they try to steal candy. And then they're like, we're going to get my candy bar. That's a fucking hilarious scene. We should do that. And like, you're not thinking through any of that stuff. I think that goes even further when you... So one of the big responses, so I read, I think Kato linked a review of the next Purge movie, the first Purge, the Purge 1, if it was a video game console, it'd be called the Purge Box 1, yeah, and in the response, in that piece, and then also in the response to that piece, and then also I've seen this elsewhere, is this, like, through line from commenters who are like, why couldn't they just do a heist film? There's all this potential. Why is it always about violence? Why is it always about killing people and not about like, oh, any crime is legal. Why don't we just do a robbery that night? And there is something to the point, in fact, that there is someone who worked on the Purge TV show who said, yeah, we consider doing a heist like movie, which I don't think that they should do. And that's the reason, one, it's not the point, but yeah. Two, at that point, it feels like it's going to lean so far into libertarian power fantasy of like, yeah. You could do anything. What if there were no laws and you could just...
There was no state. Just do what you want.
Just do what you want. And without it being grounded in the sort... Like, there's a version of that, I guess, where it's Robin Hood, right? But I think even that version of it ends up removing itself from what makes the Purge potent to begin with, which is that the people at the bottom are who are going to get fucked over already. Rob, what are you going to...
I was just going to say, I think the version of like the Purge heist movie that works is it opens on the heist. And the rest of oh, no, property rights, they hold through the night of the Purge. Like, they're coming for you. Like, you thought you'd get away with this? No. You actually stole, like, people who matters money. Yeah. And, like, we're, like that, I think, like, could work. It's an idea, but it does miss the point of, like... It's about who is subjected to violence in this world.
Yeah.
And it's not... The minute you're like, here's what I would do on the Purge, you're kind of missing it, right? Like, what cool crime would I get up to?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Saving lives.
That is the crime you would get up to. Totally. God.
I like the set dressing in the ambulance on that note. I will just briefly say that. The mise-en-scene was beautiful in that ambulance. It was all busted up, and it was like old bandages and old first aid kits, and I thought that was lovely and wonderful. Mm-hmm.
There's a version of this movie that just follows them, right?
Yeah. Like, and I would have loved that. Yeah.
Because part of the problem with this film, which is part of the problem with the last film, is just it's trying to act like a television show when it's a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And carrying so many threads that it can't quite... fully give a realization to. And the way you do like short vignettes that can have like an arc to them is like through something that can be that is your through line. Like the ambulance could have been that through line where what if instead of following this politician and how she's being saved, what if you're just getting updates about that? Like maybe they bump into her at some point.
Yeah.
There's an encounter with her, but you're just getting like TV updates or radio updates that, like, are filling in like this larger context of the world, but you're generally just following. Because I think the thing we always respond to is that we like the world building, like we like that along the margins. It like informs our understanding of like what is happening in the moment. But at the end of the day, it's like we want to see what's happening to these people who are most affected. And a really strong film could have been just following them going around and the kinds of people. Like, what choice, like, how do they choose who to help? Like, when to intervene? Like, when to enact violence to create intervention? Mm-hmm. Like, there are just a lot of really interesting questions given those characters' backgrounds, where their violent background could have been useful in the context of exploring how you choose or do not choose to, you know, engage with a world that is having all sorts of outright violence, but that there's unsaid, like the unsaid rules is an interesting idea, but it just doesn't go anywhere because we don't actually get it expanded upon in a way that feels like particularly thoughtful. Yeah. So
the, it's funny you bring up the TV thing. There was a point last night where I messaged in our group chat that was like, if anyone's still watching this, here's my tip to getting some enjoyment out of this.
Yeah.
Pretend you turned on USA or Showtime or CBS at 11 p.m. and it was
the TV show is on USA, I believe.
Okay,
so.
Well, yeah, pretend it's that and you've turned it on and you're halfway through the season and it's just, here's two episodes back to back, halfway through a season. Pretend that the character development happened elsewhere. Pretend that, like, lower your expectations to this is a USA original TV show. Get the enjoyment you can out of that. That's not a bad thing. That's not it's a judgment on them, but it's okay to have junk food now and then, you know? And so, like, go for it. Enjoy. But without that, like it does, it's spread so thin and it's, there's a lot that are just not, that just doesn't work. I don't know. I do. I guess my last positive point here is
sure.
And this kind of goes back to something we were talking about before that I kind of sidelined, was that thinking about the movement, the community center, the secret base, I really appreciate seeing that space as being something that was like community driven. I would have hated if that was like, and then Charlie Rohn turns is like, and I funded them. It was me who set this up. I guess the counter to that is the idea that there's moments where they're like, we're doing this for you, Charlie. We're the secret Charlie Rohn number one stand. And I would have loved to have seen them been like, no, we don't, even if you win, we don't think this is changing. Like, so we have to do what we can do to protect people. And those are the best moments throughout the movie for me were the moments of this community taking care of each other, taking care of the people who are hurt inside of it. You know, I look at stuff like the Crip scene or the gang member in the back of the EMT or in the back of the ambulance scene, and like those aren't good. Those aren't great sequences, but they're preferable to versions that are like. And then the gangbangers came through and they don't respect the triage unit. They don't respect anybody.
Yeah.
Or the moment where it's where like the gang kid in the back is just like cursing at everybody and is like, you know, it still falls into that terrible respectability politics shit. But there are multiple types of respectability politics. There are an endless amount of respectability politics out there. One version of it says you're immediately too far gone. And that type of respectability politics is actually too far gone for me. I won't engage with it. I won't try to convince those people to like, all right, slow down. Let's have a conversation. Like, no, you're wrong about that. But there is a respectability politics that I see inside of the Black community, inside of my own family, that is often like, it comes from a place of pain. It comes from a place of having, respectability politics comes from having to have had been respectable to live. It comes from changing the tone of your voice when you get pulled over by the cop or when you're being hassled at a store or when someone is in an elevator with you and gets very anxious. I live that life. Like, it happens a lot. I work in an office where people call me articulate. Like, it happens constantly. And you build it. And so it's a survival instinct. And so when I hear Joe, the style of Joe's respectability politics, that still feels to me like an honest, painful respectability politics. Whereas when I hear like the people on the new, when I hear Hillary Clinton's respectability politics, when I hear the Democratic Party's respectability politics, when I hear Barack Obama's respectability politics, it often moves into that second category that is like, and at some point you stop being redeemable because you didn't try. And that is, I have no room for that. And this film thankfully doesn't fall all the way to that, right? That doesn't give it a trophy, right? But it speaks again to that feeling of identity, right? Of being like, okay, I know Joe because my uncle is like Joe, you know, or my cousins are like that still feels real and grounded, and the character doesn't just feel like a stand-in. I just also wish there had given more voice to characters like Dante, who clearly know better and who are clearly ready to take the action that they know is necessary. And even if it still falls in Joe's favor in the end, at least you would have given the space for Dante. You know, it could have been the Battle of Worldviews, as Rob mentioned, you know? So
yeah.
That's Yeah, I wish all three films center on like what is the white person going to do, and like it's, you know, I guess kudos to the film in a certain sense that it puts lots of people of color in like central character positions that are, that, you know, make meaningful impacts and have an agency on the plot. But still, it's like the first movie is, will the white dad go bad? The second movie is, can this white person save these people by the end and not be saved by these other, you know, these people of color? And the third movie is, can this white savior politician put an end to the purge? And certainly, like, white people and the power they wield has an impact. And at some point, it becomes exhausting, though, that, like, they become the central conceit through all of these films. Where it's like, there's so many stories you could tell, and yet all of them still involve, like, what will the white person do? Mm-hmm. Will they do the right thing? And that just becomes exhausting by the third film. I've not seen – this is where I fell off after this one. I have no idea. I know the next one, The First Purge, exists, but I never watched a trailer. I have no sense of, like, where the series goes. From here, I'm, you know – I hope it doesn't do that again. My guess is it will, because if it's done it for three, why not go for four? But mm-hmm. like that's a bit, like a narrative bit that I'm exhausted by at this point.
Yeah.
Totally.
Real quick, I just want to also say that the one specific, like the most repeated language in this film was like one specific slur, which was so strange and hasn't really appeared. To my knowledge, hasn't appeared in the past two films. And then in this film was said by like everybody all the time, which was just so, that was probably like the most just bizarro part of this movie somehow. It was just in a bizarre movie. It was just like this like out of place, like random homophobic slur that was just being tossed around by everyone in the marginalized community.
But not only that, right? I think even the Nazi dude.
Yeah,
the white guy said it.
Yeah, which was the just rich so, white guy. Yeah, that's what it, yeah, yeah.
It was weird. I think that guy must have been watching a lot of Deadwood, where it gets tossed around a lot. And it was just, the writer was just like, yeah, I gotta work this in.
Yeah, and like, just the really, like, belabored emphasis on, like, calling each other, not the big N-word, but the smaller one.
Oh, yeah. A lot of Negro in this movie.
Yeah, and...
Or the intro of the movie where they got to use the C-word to describe the senator, like, 9 different times. Like, okay, I get it. Like,
but, again, this feels... Like, so, to me, this feels a lot like... DeMonico's strengths as a screenwriter are in the polite stranger speech in the first movie, right? Stylized, like, you know, channeling something. It doesn't feel like how people talk. It feels like dialogue. It feels like... almost like a speech you'd hear on a play. And the first movie has a lot of like set piece scenes where people like exit left. Yeah, a lot of exchanges like that. Here it feels like, oh damn, I really want to write a movie with a lot of black people.
Uh-huh.
How do black people talk? Click.
How could anyone know?
Let's go to other movies. Like, what are some cool like shows about gangs that are good about this? I'm going to watch those for inspiration. That's how this feels. And I think it's one of the other reasons that, like, again, it leans hard on its cast members of color to try to, like, sell this stuff and make it sound, like, not disastrous. Mm-hmm. And, like, they pull it off. Like, it's tolerable, but it's not good.
I'm so curious about two things. One, Assault on Precinct 13, the 2005 remake that DeMonico wrote.
Oh, really? I forgot about
that. Yeah. He wrote that. He did not direct it.
That's a Carpenter film that I have not seen.
Actually. Oh, really? We should watch.
Well, I've always seen most of his. I've seen, you know, he switched so heavily into horror, like outright horror. Like after Halloween was the movie he made after that. I just never got around to seeing, but I've heard that movie is terrific.
Totally. Two, The First Purge is not directed by DeMonico. It's written by DeMonico, but it's directed by Jared McMurray, who is a black director. And who worked on Fruitvale Station, and who I think directed a short about like hazing and stuff.
There was a world where we didn't watch this movie, and now you're just dragging us in to like giving us interesting angles that will maybe the
you
first
should watch
Purge
a trailer because that trailer is wild. It's like the trailer for The First Purge. It takes place on Staten Island. It takes place in a primarily black community. It is very much like. It seems like what if instead of, it seems like the way the inside of the black community, has been targeted many times in many ways by American government programs, and it zooms in on that. And it says, like, well, what if the first purge was basically a way to target black folk? And regardless of whether or not the science behind it is true, the pitch is the government was going to make a test case that worked. And it could be bad. The fact that it's a black director
also
raises
the idea of like giving DeMonico's words over to a black director who can be like, okay, buddy. Like, I see the some people like I see the pieces you're working with here. Give them to me.
Give me a pen.
Because like often DeMonico is putting the pieces in place. It's just the execution is really lacking. Yeah. So the idea of like giving that to someone, because it often is the case with a lot of screenwriters, and like often like screenwriters paired with good directors, like they can take scripts, elevate them, punch them up. So the idea of handing that off, especially to a director that could fill in those gaps that clearly he is unable to do as a director himself, I'm talking myself into it.
Here's the other thing. It's like the Titanic. Please. We know it sinks. The first purge is a success because there's a second purge. And so I'm ready to see that movie that is like the core question in the fiction, in the world of the fiction is, will the purge be successful? And we already know the answer is yes, whether it is or not, it is going to be successful in terms of its messaging and the way that the new founding fathers sell it and blah, blah, blah. So
yeah, the outward message is success.
Yeah.
Rather,
Who knows what happens to the characters? We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will do the first. Fine. We're watching the first purge. We're not watching the TV series. We're done.
Yeah,
I'll make that trade.
We'll go to Southampton Precinct 13. That's the point.
There we go.
That's where we go.
I'll watch. Hey, it's still October. Yeah. I can, you know, I'm on a Halloween high right now, so
there you go.
I can fit that in.
There you go.
Thanks everyone for listening. Our thanks to Tumelo for our theme music. You can find more from Tumelo at the number two, tumelomakes.bandcamp.com, and you can follow him at Mellow Makes on Twitter. You can keep up with all of us at waypoint.vice.com. Please go on iTunes. This continues to live in the Waypoint radio feed. But rate that podcast, rate our other podcasts, like the actually going in there, giving it a star, giving a review, whether
more
it's
than
on
one
iTunes
star.
Or,
five stars.
At least, five stars.
Yeah, at least three and a half.
At least
no more.
Seven
they average
stars.
Out.
You
seven
can't
stars.
Give it a three
stars.
And a half. Let's suit Mario Sunshine this, you know? Just
you can't tell our community that, though, because it'll be like the feet thing. Like, less with the feet. And then you're like, what about more feet? So it's like, give us
seven
stars.
Feet.
It's like, what about one?
Yeah, I'll show my feet if you give us a star. I don't know how you're going to get it. Anyway, you can follow me at Patrick Kubik. Natalie, where can people follow you?
At Natalie Watson.
Rob.
At Rob Zachney.
Danielle.
At Danielle R.I.
Austin.
At Austin_Walker.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back. Let's think this through. So the week we're recording this, the Purge Anarchy podcast will go up. The week after that, the Red Dead Redemption podcast will go up. And then the week after that, this will go up. Well, this
seems
probably
like
should
it.
Go up sooner than that.
Yeah, maybe we sneak
maybe
both out next
week. Maybe this is
like a bonus pod. Well, now that we maybe have a title, maybe we can sneak that in next week and get it out a little earlier. So, yeah, stay tuned. But, yeah, next up will be the final thing.
We need to purge our podcast backlog.
What?
My title won?
As long as it holds up to copyright scrutiny, I think you've got it. Thank you,
that's
Natalie.
My legacy right there.
Thank you. All right. We'll see everyone next time.
A podcast reborn.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.